Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Socks, the Catholic book blogger, and this week we have with us Christopher Blum, professor of history and philosophy and academic dean of the Augustine Institute. Dr. Blum teaches courses in philosophy on the history of evangelization and Catholic culture. He has made a special study of the intellectual virtues as understood by Catholic tradition, with particular reference to the moral disposition, practices, and institutional forms that conduct to the attainment of wisdom. Today, we're going to be talking about Christopher's new book from Sophia Institute Press, Mind at Peace, A Reclaiming an Ordered Soul in the Age of Distraction. Welcome to the show, Christopher.
Thank you so much, Pete.
You're quite welcome. And I've read through the book, and it's not very long. It's definitely readable, but it's packed full of stuff, and I'm looking forward to talking to you today about it.
Oh, that's great.
So I guess to start our conversation, I wonder if you could give us an overview of what this book is about for those of us who have not had the opportunity to read it yet.
Sure. So, you know, it is a self-help book. That's the genre that it's in, and it's addressed to men and women who have a sense that they're not coping as well as they would like to with the various distractions that are surrounding us today, from cell phones to email to whatever it might be. So that's the basic category for the book.
Okay. And why did you feel it was important to write this book?
Well, my co-author, Joshua Hochschild, and myself, he teaches philosophy in Maryland. I'm out here in Denver. We're long-distance friends and colleagues and, you know, talk and communicate from time to time. We've both noticed in our work and in our personal lives the same kinds of phenomena that are being talked about nationally, which is addiction to various devices, mounting anxiety based upon either the devices themselves or the ways in which they're used. Often social media is connected with anxiety. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, there's been a fair amount of commentary over the last 5 years from people like Nicholas Carr and Sherry Turkle and Matthew B. Crawford about what you might call the broader cultural trend that cell phones and internet use and so forth are a part of, and with trends including the rise of robots in our lives, you know, it's a really wild things that these people have been writing about. And so, you know, we've noticed these various things, and what we wanted to do was to respond to these concerns, these anxieties, these criticisms with a book that would be in effect entirely positive. So our book is not another specimen of criticism. Rather, it's an attempt to portray nature as it's supposed to be, so that from that perspective, the reader of the book will be able to think about where in life this technology, these various technologies, can be appropriately used.
Mm-hmm. Now, as we go further into the conversation about the book, I'd like to look at how you have it divided. You have it broken up into three sections: living well, sensing well, and thinking well. Can you give us a bit of a deeper overview of what each of those sections contains, how it applies to
Absolutely, Pete. Yeah, I think what I'd like to do is to go backwards. So the last third of the book, Thinking Well, is in effect what it's all about, what it's all for, right? So if any of us today, right, has some kind of nagging suspicion that we're not thinking as clearly as we would like to be, we're not attending as powerfully as we would like to be to an argument or to some subject matter. Maybe it's work, maybe it's a relationship, maybe it's prayer. Then we've got some kind of suspicion that we're not thinking as clearly, as powerfully, as in a sustained manner as we ought to be. And so the last third of the book is an examination of what human thought and willing is supposed to look like. Now, of course, it's always been the case that it's difficult to learn how to think well. But what's new about this technology and our media saturation today is the way in which our senses of sight, especially, but also hearing, are engaged by the devices. And then, as we know, thanks to neuroscience and cognitive psychology and so forth, it's not just our eyes and our ears, it's actually our brain patterns that are being affected by our habits. And so the middle third of the book is on our sense lives. And that's probably what's most distinctive about the book, in as much as 30, 40 years ago, probably, you know, nobody would have thought to be that concerned about this aspect, but now it's a live problem. And then the first third of the book is really, in some ways, about our exterior actions, right? Because if we are, constantly checking, say, some social media site, or if we can't restrain ourselves from online shopping or something like this, then probably there's an additional problem in our habits in terms of our relationships, in terms of how we're spending money, perhaps in terms of self-command with respect to temperance or courage or something like this, right? And so the first third of the book, the first steps of the book, are really to make sure that we're living a self-controlled life so that then we can take control of our sensory lives, and all of that foundation will then allow us to think more clearly, more powerfully, and more decisively.
Right. So what I thought it was interesting about the book is, we've come a long way as far as technology goes. I grew up, I'm sure you did too, with TV, and that was a big deal when it first came out. But now we're with smartphones that we basically hand to our children like candy, and sometimes don't even think about it because it's almost like society has made it an expectation that a child needs to have that. And I think that's very interesting that we've, in a way, become dependent upon this technology, even to function through our jobs. You and I would not be able to conduct this interview if it weren't for the technology we're using right now to do it.
Sure. No, that's exactly right. So, our book is not about rejecting this technology. Mm-hmm. It's about making sure that our habits of acting and sensing and thinking and judging and willing are strong enough so that this technology is something that is a tool for us rather than ourselves becoming a tool for the machine, which is that's the threat,
Yeah, very interesting. And to close this segment out, you kind of alluded to this in your one description, was about the robots, and I'm sure you've seen the press lately about the robots being made over in England, where they actually interviewed this robot, which was like totally absurd, I think. But anyway, we're actually getting to that point where, this used to be stuff of science fiction. It's becoming a reality very quickly.
Yeah, it is, and as our own interpersonal relations become more impoverished, we're more likely to be tricked by things that robots can do, right? So that's, you could say that's part of what we're trying to address here in the book, right? If our ways of relating with one another are rich and deep and real and human, then we're not going to be inclined to take robots very seriously. Right. But if all we ever do is send texts with other people, well, yeah, they could probably figure out a way to have a robot send some pretty convincing texts.
No doubt. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media with my guest, Chris McMillan, and we'll be right back. Thank you. Pumpkin spice, southern pecan, apple pie, and maple French toast are just a few of the delicious fall coffee flavors from Grim Bean Coffee Company. With over 20 coffee options, Grim Bean has the perfect coffee for you. Let Grim Bean Coffee Company deliver artisan whole bean or ground coffee directly to you. Visit grimbeancoffee.com today for 10% off your order with the code BREADBOX at checkout. Experience the best with Grim Bean Coffee Company. Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, Catholic book blogger. Today we are looking at the book, The Mind of Peace, Reclaiming an Ordered Soul in the Age of Distraction. And we're here with author Christopher Bloom discussing that book. And we just basically touched the top level of what this book's about in the last segment. And Christopher, I've heard you describe this book as a retreat in other interviews. And I wondered if you could explain its use and is it a solo retreat or can it be used in a group setting?
Sure. So it's divided into 18 chapters, and each chapter has quest for reflection, usually three of them, and then a short selection from Holy Scripture or a spiritual writer. And so I suppose our thought here is that readers would use one a day, right? Mm-hmm. So that it makes for about a 3 week long personal need of reflection and self self assessment around technology use. But certainly it could be used in a group setting because the business of reflection, most of them would be appropriate for conversation starters in a group. We'll see. One never knows exactly how a book is going to take life. I'd be delighted if it were to be helpful in that way as well, too.
Yeah. So as I worked through the book, you know, it definitely had me thinking and assessing things, which obviously you just said was the point of the book. So it served its purpose with one person at least. It's truly, you know, amazing to me as I look back on, you know, my own life and how technology has come into it, that something like the iPhone that began this whole smartphone industry was created to make our lives better, but it certainly has caused enough havoc in our lives, has it not?
Yeah, I mean, the data isn't crystal clear. There's lots of different studies and data sets are always complete, but it does seem to be the case that many smartphone users have a hard time not picking up period. Depending on the data you see, and it's anywhere from 6 to 8 minutes or 20 minutes, but in any event, it's not a very long period of time, right? The idea that the notion here is that when people have smartphones, they tend to be turning them on, consulting them 30, 40, 50, 60 times a day. And that what that means is that any kind of activity that would take more than 10 minutes, more than 20 minutes, is getting interrupted. Mm-hmm. And that comes as with a cost, right? And then depending on how people set up their smartphones, they may very well have chimes going off, so that even if they're not picking it up, they're nevertheless being interrupted by it from time to time. You know, I think there's enough evidence from what we see around us and from our own habits of using things to suggest that it's time to take stock and really take a hard look at the technology.
Right. And that kind of leads into my next question. And it's the first chapter in your book, and that's self-awareness. And you talk about, mm-hmm. you know, this high degree of comfort and wealth that we have. in Western countries. And I pulled a quote out of here that really jumped out at me, where you say, from a theological perspective, it's plausible to assert that the unnamed evil of our time is the sin of acedia or sloth, which is not mere laziness, but truly a kind of discouragement, despair, sense of purposelessness, or powerlessness, end quote. And it all sounds a whole lot like what comes up often in my conversations with authors, is this God-shaped hole that we all have that we try to fill with stuff, and that stuff never fills right. the hole. Is that what you're keying in on here?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. That's the bottom line, right? Before we get to that bottom line, there's several intermediate stages of the malady, right? And, you know, we could imagine, for instance, that we're talking about somebody who's trying to write a novel, let's just say, right? Mm-hmm. You know, a 300-400 page story that takes somebody from, you know, birth to death, or from a crisis to a revolution or something like this. You know, think of it as a novel if they're very involved. Can you imagine somebody trying to do something like that and admitting to being interrupted every 6 minutes, or right. preoccupied with a book feed or something of that nature? You know, no, you wouldn't, right? My purpose in writing this novel and so on, right? And the same would be true for you who designing a building, or planning a business, or you know, any complicated task. Right? So the fact that we allow ourselves, many of us allow ourselves to be preoccupied and interrupted in this way, indicates certainly a God deficit, right? But quite likely also a deficit in seriousness about our normal everyday affairs.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah, that's a good point. So dovetailing that question and that obvious problem we've identified, what is this peace that we are chasing?
Yeah, that's a big question there. You know, the simple answer is to say that it's to use Aquinas's words, the repose of the mind in its end. Okay. Now, of course, the end of the mind is God, right? So, if we are habitually keeping God in mind, right, it doesn't mean distracting ourselves from what's immediately in front of us because we're thinking of God in a different way, right? But rather, if our self-command, presence of mind throughout the day enables us to see what we're doing in light of God's will for us, right? And we're recollected, and from time to time we're directly thinking about God, praying, right? Then that kind of peace we're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Where the mind, right, instead of a source of distraction, anxiety, questions, and new things, right? Instead of that, it's our tether, our foundation, our true perspective on reality, and so on, right? So, this is what we're built for, right?
Right.
The dog and a person, right? Is it a dog doesn't have a mind, and so as you know, those who are dog owners know, right? It's the next thing that smells that it's going to chase, right?
Right.
And a dog smells the world 100 times more powerfully than we do, right? This is why they're so insane, because they're just running around and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's the absolute opposite of the kind of peace that we human beings are meant to have. We're be far-seeing, you know, firm in our choices, firm in our resolutions, able to plan, able to maintain relationships over time, right? Able to do complex things, right? And all of all of that ability, if it's to be there, it has to be built on a foundation of a kind of self-possession or peace.
All right. Well, we're going to take another quick break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to get a little more further into the book, A Mind at Peace. We're here with Christopher Bloom. You're listening to Off the Shelf, and we'll be right back. Catholic solution to the healthcare problem is here. Paying too much for your healthcare costs? Solidarity HealthShare is a healthcare sharing ministry which provides an ethical way to fund healthcare costs while protecting and practicing our Catholic beliefs. Best yet, Solidarity HealthShare's members are exempt from the fines and penalties in the Affordable Care Act. For more info, call 844-313-4999. Again, that's 844-313-4999, or visit SolidarityHealthShare.org. That's SolidarityHealthShare.org. Redbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. Today we are with Christopher Bloom discussing his book, A Mind at Peace, Reclaiming an Ordered Soul in the Age of Distraction. And Christopher, I thought rather interestingly, you brought some other aspects into it, not just technology. And one of those, you, at the end of these chapters, I think we need to tell people is they end with questions. And at the end of the one chapter, you talk about eating habits, drinking habits, sleep habits. And basically, this is all a conversation about temptation and temperance and thank you, original sin, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. I mean, what, you know, the bottom line here about digital media technology, right, is that it's just that. It's a medium. It's a middle, right? Mm-hmm. It's all about communicating. And so the intelligent question to ask ourselves is just exactly what's on the other end of this thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And sadly, I mean, you know, body and soul have to be kept together. People have to make a living. But sadly, the answer is there's people trying to make money from us on the other end of these things, mm-hmm. you know, in one way or another, not to be cynical about it, right? But so if we're going to navigate these devices well, we've got to have self-control with respect to, you know, bodily desires, including, you know, our desires for shiny things, right? I mean, this is why we have a chapter in the book on our desire to accumulate material possessions, mm-hmm. because, you know, let's face it, it's an affluent society, and we all are bombarded with enticing images of beautiful cars or what, you know, beautiful clothing, whatever it might be, right? And mm-hmm. if we don't have self-control about that matter, among others, then of course the digital communications technology is just going to exploit that.
Right. Exactly. So I think it's, you know, as we've talked here, it's pretty easy for us to recognize that there's a problem. Technology is distracting us. It's consuming us in some instances. And the harder part is implementation of steps to resolve that mm-hmm. problem. Now, I wouldn't say your book necessarily has a plan on what to do or techniques on how to tackle that. But I'm sure there were some churning around in your mind as you wrote this book. Can you provide us with any?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we purposefully didn't suggest any techniques because this is not a one-size-fits-all problem here, right? I mean, most of us simply have to use these devices for much of the day, mm-hmm. right? Whether it's email or texting or the phone or whatever, right? And so the landscape here is changing so quickly, right? That today's technique is tomorrow's object of scorn, right? I think that the basic high-level technique is some kind of fasting, right? Mm-hmm. And the bottom line intelligent thing to do is to turn the darn thing off at a certain point at night,
yeah.
so that you can sleep, for goodness sakes,
right.
you know?
Right.
So that's, I take that to be sort of obvious. you know, after that, people have lots of different approaches, you know? So, for instance, going without as much media as possible, maybe all of it, on a Sunday is a great thing to do. And I really think that makes a much bigger difference in somebody's life than just during the day on that Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has a way of spilling over, right? Because you're training yourself. Again, I've heard of an interesting technique, which I can't say I follow perfectly, but I find it a compelling idea of only checking email the last 10 minutes of each hour while at work, right? I haven't been able to implement that in my own life, but I admire that. That's an interesting technique if you can get away with it. Or again, I know somebody else who won't open up the laptop until noon, right? So that the morning is a kind of sacred time and then the afternoon is filled with emails and whatnot, right? There's so many different ways that our days are ordered that we thought it was important to leave it to the reader to try to devise something.
Mm-hmm. Now,
if I can just keep going for two mm-hmm. seconds here, yeah, because the American Psychological Association did a study last year on social media and stress, and they had a haunting line in this study. It went like this. It is now common for people to make resolutions about their use of social media. It is not common for people to keep them.
Wow.
Right. And so, again, this is why we've avoided trying to give a recipe here, because it's so important to make a resolution that you can actually keep.
Right. And you alluded to this a little bit earlier. I think it was in segment one, but it's kind of like the dog out in the field and sees a squirrel, and then there's another squirrel, squirrel, squirrel. You know, we've become so accustomed to flipping through the Facebook page that, and this comes up in a number of places in your book. You actually talk about it when you refer to people reading a book, that they can't do that anymore because they're so used to flipping that phone and getting the quick news bite that they can't sit down and read a book.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that insight was first discussed by Nicholas Carr in his book, The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. I don't know if he was the first, but he's the first person to grab the headlines on mm-hmm. that point. I've been able to see it in my own life, you know, and so when I really need to read something carefully, I make sure that the laptop's closed down and that I've got a pencil and a piece of paper next to me, because I need to have those exterior helps in order to keep my eyes on the page and think the necessary thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I thought it was rather interesting in the book, and off the back cover, it says, drawing on the wisdom of the world's greatest thinkers, including Plato, Aristotle, St. Augustine, St. Thomas Aquinas, these pages help you identify and show you how to cultivate the qualities of character you need to survive in our media-saturated environment. Now, those gentlemen certainly had no clue that we would be dealing with the type of technology we are today. So how do those two right. marry? How do people from that age marry with this problem we have today?
Yeah, good, valid question, to be sure, right? So the first thing to say is that human nature doesn't change. And so the vices that we're seeing in our own character that are prompted by this technology are that the more parts of the past were aware of, they were just prompted by other mutations. Right? So, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same, right? Augustus definitely concerned about the vice he calls curiosity. Mm-hmm. And his example is, you know, just watching the rabbit run around when he's supposed to be praying.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it's ever been difficult for human beings to be bitten by curiosity, right? The fable of Pandora's box is enough to let us know that this is an ages old problem. Maybe the thing to note about the internet is that it makes the exercise of curiosity, the developing of the habit of curiosity, easier because private, effortless, seemingly infinite. There's always something else to click through to. And so the vice is not new, but the temptations are arguably a little bit more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we need to look more deeply into human nature to see what the remedies are. And of course, the wise of the past were tremendous students of human nature, and that would be the second reason, right? Is that the four whom you mentioned, and there are many others, we're relying on people like Thérèse of Avila, Thérèse of Lisieux, St. Francis de Sales, John Paul II, and so on. The wise, we call them wise precisely because they've been attentive to what's deepest in us. And again, that doesn't change with time.
Right. All right, we're going to take one more break, and we'll come back for our last segment, and we'll wrap up talking about mind to peace, claiming an order of soul in the age of distraction. You're listening to Off the Shelf here on Redbox Media, and we'll be right back. Hi, I'm Pete Sox, the host of Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. Head on over to my show page at breadboxmedia.com and support my show and our work here at Breadbox Media by becoming a premium member today. And we believe it's more about giving than receiving. When you become a premium member for just $9.99 a month, you unlock incredible discounts from our sponsors like Rugged Rosaries, Catholic Books Direct, Lifeboat Coffee, the Mass Box, and the Harrisburg Senators, just to name a few. And it's even better. Every month, Breadbox Media chooses a nonprofit organization to partner with, and 10% of every premium membership is dedicated to that nonprofit. Join the revolution in Catholic media. Become a premium member by visiting my page today. Back to Off the Shelf. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger, here with author Christopher Bloom, discussing his book, The Mind at Peace, Reclaiming an Ordered Soul in the Age of Distraction. We've had a great conversation so far today, Chris. And I guess what it all comes down to is steadfastness, and that's our willingness to stay the course and not allow the technology to distract us. And as we've said already, that can be difficult. Especially in depending upon what our line of work is.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, one of the most important themes in our book, from my perspective and Josh's too, I'm sure, is the priority of the common good and the virtue of justice. Okay, every single one of us lives in some sort of community, whether it's a family or you know, just a married couple or a work environment or a neighborhood or whatever it might be, you know. And we all are in relationships such that other people are depending upon us. And this is really what it comes down to. We dearly need to have self-command, not just with technology, but in all areas of our life, so that other people can rely on us. And so it does come down to steadfastness and courage in that regard.
Yeah. You also talk about attentiveness. I'm basically hitting some highlights here in the book as we close up
sure.
this episode. And I thought it was interesting where you get into the sound around us. You have a reflection question that ends in that chapter that flat out says, am I entangled by the pleasures of the ear? And isn't it funny that even though we're striving for silence, people claim, you know, there's too much noise around me, too much distraction, yet they can't work without having background noise like music playing.
Right. Yeah, it is funny. Now, you know, a man who lives in a glass house ought not throw stones, right?
Right.
So, you know, it could very well be the case that this person has a work environment in which the ambient distractions are very severe, and the only solution is to put earphones on, right?
Right.
So that can happen. I recognize that. There are a lot of people who work in cubicles and so on. But allowing for that, right, then we'd want to ask the question, just what is it that we think we're doing when we're, say, trying to do our homework while listening to our favorite songs, right? And I think that the answer, candidly, has to be that at some level we're fooling ourselves, right? It's a very old temptation to think that we can do two or three or four things at once. And we really can't.
Yeah, that's putting it bluntly.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I got to give you props here. You quoted one of my favorite writings by Pope and now Saint from St. John Paul II. You pulled a writing from the Borum Exerns on human labor. And he says, sweat and toil, which work necessarily involves in the present condition of the human race, present the Christian and everyone who is called to follow Christ with the possibility of sharing lovingly in the work that Christ came to do. And one of my favorite quotes from that writing, it happened early on where he made the statement that work was created for man, man was not created for work. So he's kind of, in some sense, again, he's writing this document before even we had cell phones. It's just amazing that we have these writings by saints that and popes. So you talk Benedict's in here as well, 16th, and they're applicable no matter what the circumstances or age is that we currently find ourselves in. There's going to be something that comes down the pike that's even more probably astonishing than cell phones. 30 years from now, we'll be amazed by that gadget.
Right. Yeah, well, right. Virtual reality, for instance, is right around the corner. And whatever one thinks of the phrase artificial intelligence, it's coming too, right? I mean, we don't have to grant that these machines are actually intelligent, but they will be doing pretty darn amazing things, right? So, like maybe self-driving cars, right? That seems to be very close indeed. The wisdom of the ages is going to be there for us as we navigate these things. And I think that there's a particular gift in John Paul II, right? This is a man who was born in, you know, right after World War I, at a time when there were cars, but they hadn't completely transformed the landscape, and before television and everything else, right? So he's got a deep foundation in a rhythm of life that, you know, is becoming increasingly foreign, and that's a help to us, right? I mean, just this point about work, if we're honest with ourselves, we have to admit that though we use these machines for work purposes, we also use them quite a bit for entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And we stand to ask ourselves, just how much entertainment do we need?
Right. Well, not only that, the devices we carry are now more powerful than the desktop computers we had.
Yes, precisely.
It's really insane. One thing I thought was great about the book, and it's in the questions again, and I don't know if how intentional it was that you did this, but you talk about prayer. And I think the way to overcome any addiction or any finding that peace we're looking for is in prayer. And there's two questions that popped up that I have right here. And that was in the one at the beginning of it, you say, do I pray for God's grace before I make important decisions and begin important tasks? And the other one was, do I pray for the gift of wisdom that I might see the world as Christ does? So, you know, that to me, that is probably one of the most important ways to find that focus, to find that peace, and to find the strength to be able to do what we need to do to control this.
Absolutely. I think that's exactly right, you know, and as the wise and the holy have always said, right, there's times and places for prayer, right? That need to be set aside, right? So maybe the very first step is to make a resolution to pray first thing in the morning, you know, and just to ask God to set one's day in order and to shed the light of grace on one's day. I think that's indispensable. And I think most Catholics have that habit. So then it simply becomes a question of how to deepen that habit.
Right. So that we're not the dog chasing the squirrel in the yard.
Yeah. Exactly.
Off to the other direction. So as we close down, Christopher, I want to give you a chance to talk about some of your other work. I know this isn't your first book. What are some other pieces you've written?
Oh, that's very generous of you. You know, maybe I'll mention some translations that I've done with Sophia Institute Press.
Okay.
Here. Some spiritual writings from a French bishop named Bossuet. So I've put out three volumes of his spiritual writings, Meditations for Advent, Meditations for Lent, and Meditations on Mary. And, you know, I think, again, as you say, prayer is really the key here for self-command, and part of the life of prayer surely is our admitting that we need help in turning our mind to the things of God. And so good spiritual reading provides us with that help, you know, so that our mind isn't just wandering, but we're actually thinking what the spiritual writer is helping us to think by his words, you know. So that's been a real joy for me to do that work, and I've really profited from it, and my wife has helped me with the translations, so it's been good for the two of us as a couple, and that's you know, it's great. There's great things out there in the Catholic tradition, and you don't have to look too far to find them.
Right, right. So, in closing, where can people find A Mind at Peace, Reclaiming an Ordered Soul in the Age of Distraction, and any of your other works?
Oh, well, A Mind at Peace is available from SophiaInstitute.com, and it's just about to be republished. This month, in fact, it was republished by the Augustine Institute, and so it will be available in those back-of-the-church kiosks that are in parishes around the nation.
Great. Great. We have one of those, so I'll have to look into that.
Oh, good.
And any closing thoughts?
Well, just that, you know, we're all here as God's sons and daughters, you know, and we need his grace for any work, and especially for the very difficult work of self-command, you know. I know all of us, we just want to serve God. We just want to know his will and to do it. And praying that earnestly will result in him helping us to heaven.
Spot on. Christopher, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule and spending it with us today.
Thank you, Pete.
You're quite welcome. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. And until next time, God bless.